This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 145 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Really appreciate it. Your favorite meathead is back at it again this week, joining you with Kevin Poppy. Really excited to get Kevin back on the show. It's been a little over a year since he last joined. He actually came on, I think the last time he's come on the show was for a Meathead Monday episode back in the beginning of quarantine. We did an episode about different things you could do while you were stuck at home training, which was pretty cool for him to join me on that. You know, we're definitely in some better times now with him coming back on, so that's good news. But overall, very excited for him to come on, and I think the topic we're talking about today is a really big one. You saw the title, Stop Bitching, How to Add Value to What Strength and Conditioning Coaches Provide to Elevate Our Field. So Kevin is very passionate about, you know, hey, yeah, it does kind of suck with we get paid sometimes in this field, and you know, it's not great. But, you know, are there things that we can be proactively doing to make it better? He's really big on that. So we're tackling that big topic, like what can we do as professionals to make ourselves more valuable? You know, do we want to take responsibility for wins and losses? Is that a rabbit hole that we really want to, you know, climb down? Is that a can of worms we really want to open? You know, I think it's important to discuss solutions and not always just talk about the problems. You know, what are things that we can do to really get over the undervalued kind of feel that we've been given in terms of what we do? And then we talk a little bit about the specifics of sport, understanding sports and their movement needs, you know, where we could kind of begin with that in terms of what we're able to do in specifically helping athletes with their sport, transferability, all those keywords you always hear. So really excited for that. Before we get to the episode with Kevin, I do want to tell you guys about Manscaped, my deal with them, and what we have going on. As you know, use code CHALLENGER20, CHALLENGER20, for 20% off and free shipping on all Manscaped products. Guys, if you've listened to the episodes I've had this ad on already and haven't ordered one of these things, I don't know what you're doing. You need to get one. Waterproof. It's got a freaking LED light on it. You could use it in the shower. If you're a man and you care about how you look and your grooming is something that needs to be worked on, and you know, you need to get on top of that, you know, stop wasting time. Go on their website. Check out what they have. You know, it's more than just one product. Although I will tell you, the Lawnmower 3.0 is a friggin' hell of a product. Take it from a guy that, you know, is hairy for sure. Needs to definitely take care of his grooming. But all kidding aside, they have some awesome stuff. You know, really excited to be working with them. And you need to check it out. And no matter who you are, if you're older, if you're younger, if you're older, I keep talking about the Weed Whacker. It's great to use for those tough-to-reach hairs in your ears and nose. If you are a female listener and you have a husband, a brother, a friend, whatever it is that you want to get a gift for, that is a great gift and a great idea for birthdays coming up. And if you are a guy, say no more. You know, go buy a lawnmower or a plow or some of their really awesome boxer briefs or the cologne or whatever it is, because I'm sure you could benefit from it and you'll be way better off. So go check that out. Remember, Challenger 20 for 20% off and free shipping. Without further ado, let's get over to today's episode with Kevin. I hope you guys enjoy, and I will talk to you next time. Peace. All right, everyone. Excited to welcome on Kevin Poppy. Kev, thanks so much for coming back on, man. Thrilled to have you back. Really fun last two times you came on the show. Looking forward to this time as well.
I appreciate it, Jerry. Excited to be here.
Yeah, for sure. So give me an idea. We talk a lot, but for the listeners, you know, it's been a little while since the last time you were on the show. What's new? What's going on? Obviously, COVID was a major hurdle for everybody. You know, what new things are going on for you and what you guys are doing training wise?
So I think last time we talked, we were talking about at home options for some programming during COVID.
Yep.
So really what's been going on is adjusting to this kind of like new normal here, where now that we're not through the COVID thing, we're still navigating it, but we're kind of getting back to a cruising altitude, if you will. So pretty much that took us right into the summer. We had a lot of our minor league players that didn't play a season, so they were here throughout the summer. So there was a lot of adjusting. As far as the way we operate in the summer, we had to make some adjustments there to accommodate some of our pro athletes, but also the safety requirements that were needed. And then really from there, it's pretty much just been headlong into the off-season 2.0, if you will, and just trying to get these guys ready, the baseball guys anyway, ready for the season coming up. But that's pretty much what we've been doing, is just operating, and now we're finally starting to get to a point where we can make some plans moving forward. But really, it's just been putting out fires and operating since the last time we talked.
Yeah. What is – I'm going through the same thing now with, like, so many of these players haven't played, in, whether it's college guys, affiliate guys, but some of my indie ball guys are really – I've been dealing with a load of shit with all this. Like, how much – two questions, I guess, here. Do you it's a struggle in the sense – I almost feel like we've talked about this before, but it's a struggle in the sense of, like – you don't really know when things are going to start, when things are going to happen. It's almost like, all right, like I trained these guys, COVID happened, you know, as COVID happened, we were getting them, or they were already playing, like whether it was spring training or whatnot. And now I have to kind of get them training again because, and they don't even know when the hell their season's going to be. Like what was your mindset on, like, all right, what do I have to do here? Like maybe they have to be ready at a certain point. Maybe they don't have to be ready. Like, maybe we have a year-long offseason now that we've never had before. And then I guess the other part of that too is, like, how much do you have to kind of step in and play psychologist to these guys, because they're going through some shit, like their career, just like we are with the businesses, but like they don't know when they're going to play again. Like they could be losing a valuable year of being 23, 24, and like they're a fringe guy. Like how much of it is also just kind of pulling them through on the mental side of it as well?
So That's a really good question and a good point. Our mindset here has really been about trying to play the hand we're dealt, not dwell too much on the circumstances that we can't control. So with our athletes during the shutdown with the minor league guys that we knew weren't going back immediately, but they were all being told to stay ready, but there was no real answers given. We were pretty much just doing trying to make progress through almost like a true conjugate style programming. Just trying to make some progress on strength and speed, but also just stay ready and hitting peaks more frequently, I guess, in a more of a multi-peak periodization than we normally would entail in an off season. Then when the writing was really on the wall that there was not going to be a season for the minor league guys, we pretty much switched into off season mode. But around that time, it was really hard for people to stay motivated. So we tried to make some because they didn't really have anything to be preparing for. So we tried to make some competitions within the group to get people motivated for different goals and different reasons, not necessarily gearing up for the season like it normally would be. So one of those is like a body composition challenge, trying to make big changes. Another one was speed improvements and things like that. But that was pretty much our goal. And like you said, there's a heavy layer of psychology to it where, like I said, we used the competitions, but another thing we did was just talk to each athlete that seemed to kind of be going through that rut, which everyone was, and just say, hey, you know, this is going to be you can do one of two things here. You can treat this as a curse or a blessing. And as a curse, you can say, well, I don't have a season, so why even work? And then you shut down. And you have to imagine that's what most of the population has done at this point. And the way I was trying to communicate to our athletes here was, okay, so that's good news for you, because all these people that, if you're a fringe guy or a mid-level prospect, all these guys that were probably ahead of you or right there with you have that mindset of, what's the point? I'm going to take some weeks off and not worry about it. And you can use this time to actually pass them up. So this can be a blessing for you, because all these things that you've never had time to work on in a 4 or 5 month off season, we now have plenty of time to work on, and you can measure yourself against your competition within the industry and really start separating yourself. And that's pretty much the message we've been trying to drive home.
Yeah, it was tough. Like even some of my hockey players, like, you know, not having school seasons this year, like, oh, what am I? They're always training for something, right? Like the athlete is, as much as they may like to train, at the end of the day, their training, if you told a lot of these guys that, hey, this does nothing for your performance in your sport, you got to suspect a good, at least half of them off the top of your head would be like, all right, I'm not doing this anymore.
Like, I know a lot of really high level guys in tons of different sports that do it because they care so much about their sport that they know it's going to help that, but they can't stand it, which I respect. Like, if you can't stand something, but you do a really friggin' good job at doing it and being consistent with it because you care about something else so much. Like, I have a lot of respect for those guys. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, one of my hockey guys literally looks at me all the time. He could potentially play in the NHL someday. Like, he's a really good player. He's like, I just want you to know, like, I hate this fucking shit, but I do it because I know that gets me better and that, like, you know what you're doing and, like, it's going to make me a better hockey player. And I'm like, I respect that. Like, you show up here at 9 a.m. 4 days a week during the offseason because you know it makes you better at hockey. You must really care about hockey. Like, that says something to me.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, that's where our industry sometimes gets it wrong is they want the weight room to be the end all be all. But I have guys that are in the same exact boat. Like, I'll program a little differently for some of these guys because they absolutely hate the weight room. There's one or two things that kind of get them excited about the weight room. But really they're just checking a box because they want to be better at their sport. They know they need it. They know, understand the importance, but they're not enjoying it. And so for me, it's a matter of, I absolutely respect that. And I try to cater to that because that is their sport. That is their method to get paid. And so instead of trying to convince them otherwise, it's more feed into that for them.
Yeah, I think it says something too, like in terms of what we have to do. Like, you have somebody that, like, they come to you because they want to get better, or like, and you tweeted about this the other day, where I want to talk to you about this eventually in the show, but you know, the reverse of like building the what you want to do to relate back to sport based on the context of the weight room versus doing it the opposite way, like how you should really look at what the sport requires and then build the weight room around that. And I think like seeing these guys, like these athletes, these girls, these guys, they come to you and they hate the idea of training, but they do it because it's going to help them in their sport. And it really says to you, like, okay, like, I better make sure I'm really helping them get better at their sport. Like, I'd be pretty pissed off if I was a guy that hated lifting and then I found out what I was doing wasn't really doing jack shit for me on the ice, on the field, on the court, whatever sport I was playing. And I think that really speaks to the idea that, like, obviously there's other reasons to do it as well, but, like, that's a big thing. Like, a lot of these athletes are coming to you to say, I need to get better at my sport. You need to be doing stuff that gets them better at their sport. You know, obviously the continuum you slide up and down on depends, but, like, you need to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
So this is where this gets dicey for me, that, you know, so many people, I feel like, and I think I would say we agree on this. I'm pretty sure you had a whole thread on this actually, but the desire or the feeling that they need to run away from GPP, like, oh, it doesn't exactly relate to sport. I think we talked about this on the phone a little bit. Like, not everything has to relate to the sport for it to be good for us to do in training. Like, where did that come from? Why are we there? Why are we here? Like, where does that?
Yeah. I mean, the thread I wrote was just cause I've been seeing it a lot on social media with a lot of coaches is that, this isn't exactly how the body's going to work on the field. And so they'll like trash another coach because of that. But it really, like we talked about, it's really not about that. Like, for instance, we went far away from sports specificity years ago because we realized that, okay, just loading up the movements the athlete does in a sport is not actually going to help them in their sport necessarily. There are some exceptions and there are some like things like weighted balls and things like that that can obviously help if you just add a little bit of load as sort of a constraint. But then it went to the point of just over the top GPP, where it's like all we're trying to do is build a bigger engine, get them stronger in the weight room, deadlift, squat, bench press, clean, that sort of thing. And now it's kind of like veering back into specificity where, for whatever reason, because we started talking about
it's very cyclical.
Yeah, well, we started talking about, the SAID principle and which specific adaptations to impose demands. Everyone started taking that a little further and further and further. So it started off with, all right, we're going to emphasize these joints. We're going to stress the system in this way by adding this kind of a load, or we're going to do VBT. And now it's kind of like gone too far to the point of, we're going right back to, it has to be like sports specific, in the sense of we're just like adding bands to a swing or something like that. And I think that's kind of, there's a fine line between like, specific exercise selection, to get a specific adaptation, as opposed to being specific exactly to the sport. So an example of that would be, you know, when we talk about the hamstrings are essential in, let's say, the pitching delivery, they play a big role. Okay. A way to go about that is not saying that we need to use the hamstrings in the exact same way as they're used on the mound within the weight room context. But that's how a lot of people are interpreting that. It's more so that, okay, we need the hamstrings strengthened at a lengthened range. So maybe that's more like glute extensions or like Romanian chair type exercises. But now people have taken that to the point where, well, that's not exactly how it's happening on the mound, because, you know, they're not horizontal to the ground during a pitching delivery, which just is kind of nonsense. And I think we've kind of gotten away from what specificity actually means for us in the training context, which is these are specific exercise selections and methods of training to create an adaptation that we can use and blend it into on-field performance. Not, it has to be a specific exercise that is specifically tailored to the delivery of the pitching motion or the swing or any other sport movement, kicking a soccer ball or whatever it might be.
Yeah, you obviously, that was a really good example, and I think so. Like, obviously, we talked about like the theme and the topic for this episode, like, you know, how can we add value to what we're doing as strength and conditioning coaches? You know, both of us being private sector guys, like, we don't really have a tremendous dog in this. Like, I'm not trying to get paid more by a school. Like, we have businesses. It's different. We have an easier time setting the standard for what we want to pay, what we want people to pay us. And I think both of us are definitely at the point now where, like, you know, we set the tone. I tell somebody what to pay me. They don't want to pay it, they don't come. Like, it's pretty easy in that sense, but we're still obviously like part of the field and we want better for the field. And I think it's a big problem. You know, and I'm sure you agree of the way some of us get paid, but we disagree in the sense of like, or we disagree with other people in the sense that, you know, oh, like, we should just get paid more. Well, it's like, okay, well, why? Like, what do we add to the field? And I think the example you just provided with hamstrings and pitching, if we're too far on one end of the spectrum of saying like, okay, like, that's not good, it's not specific enough to, or how it's being used in pitching, I think we toe the line of danger of saying, okay, we're really not that useful, because unless something's done exactly the way it's done in sport, it's not impactful. So then someone's going to say, okay, why do I even need you when I have the sport coach? And then you have the other side of it where it's like, I'm just going to build an engine, quote unquote, or get the athletes more robust, which there's a time and place. But if I can't zone in a little bit on the specifics of what's being involved in the sport of the athletes that I'm training, and I can't get good at looking at those movements and finding out ways to incorporate things that help build those specifically, then I'm at the point where it's like, well, I'm not going to pay you too much, because any old person that knows how to power lift can just strength train my athletes and they'll get a little bit stronger and then that's it. So I think going on either extreme of that spectrum is going to leave us in a lot of trouble when it comes to furthering what we're getting paid in the field, especially in the school setting. I don't know if you agree with that.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think, you know, it's a really complex idea that you just brought up, but there is the sides that'll say things like, well, SPP will be done in the sports, so you don't need to mess with sport movements, just build a bigger engine. And, you know, you hear me like, and others, like even like Kyle Rogers, will dog that phrase, to build a bigger engine, because it's become kind of a joke. But there is a time and a place where you just really need to focus on building a more robust athlete. However, if that's where it stops, it's really not that hard to do that. I don't think there's a lot of coaches that would struggle getting guys stronger, right? Or just building bigger, faster, stronger athletes. That's a pretty easy task for a high school athlete, especially. And then on the other end, to say that everything that's specific needs to be done on the field, I think that's kind of crazy too, because then where do you bridge the gap? And I think for us, as I think the reason we call ourselves performance coaches, and I don't shy away from S&C, I really don't care what you call me. But why we do call ourselves performance coaches is because it's not just strength conditioning.
Yeah.
And it's not quite,
we're very much in agreement on this. Yeah.
It's not, I'm not giving pitching lessons necessarily, but, at the same time, like, our job is in the middle. Our job is not to do one or the other. Our job is to achieve one and blend it into the other.
Yes.
And so I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is that because for the longest time, and you know, there's a lot of coaches that have been in the industry for a very long time that would disagree with me. And I get their argument, because honestly, when they were coming up, like, there wasn't enough resources to be able to master or even be as competent in multiple areas. But now, like, the modern era, like, information is too accessible to only be proficient in one area. There, it just is. And it's not that I don't think that there's a role for the guy who's the greatest barbell coach. I do. I just think that the market is moving away from that and moving towards someone that can provide value in multiple areas. And so I think that's where we kind of get lost as an industry. It's not about, I don't think we should be paid more, I think people should stop whining. It's about the reality of the situation and what we can actually do to help improve it instead of just complaining.
Yeah, I actually got an argument about this months ago with a guy. I'll be straight up and honest about it. A guy that I have respect for, but I disagree with on some things. Cody Hughes. We agree on a lot of stuff. We disagree on a lot of stuff. I think that's normal, and I think that's okay. He's obviously a smart guy, but he made a point that, I think it was Corey Schlesinger made a point on a podcast that it's a joke to say we're sports performance coaches if we're not particularly working with the athletes in their sport. And I disagree, and I agree with how you just said it. To me, when I say strength conditioning coach, like, it's the never ending battle of someone, you know, I'm at a family outing and someone says, oh, this is like, I've never met somebody, this is my brother, my son, my whatever, he's a personal trainer. And years ago, that would make my skin crawl. Like, I'm not a fucking Bally Fitness worker that, like, does goblet squats with a 60-year-old mom. Like, that's not what I do. Like, to me, that's personal training. But at the same time, like, oh, he's a strength and conditioning coach. And I always used to, like, I started to think about it more like, my athletes are sprinting, my athletes are jumping, we're doing things to help them with their swing in baseball. I'm working on things that are specific to skating and hockey. Like, it's more than that. And that's where sports performance, to me, I'm a sports performance coach, meant I'm helping them improve qualities that will directly aid in their sport. And the argument was, okay, are you out there making your outfielders better at reading the ball? I'm like, that's stupid. I'm not doing that. I'm not saying I do that. But what I can tell you is that if on a scale of 1 to 10, my center fielder reads balls on a 7 and he stays there and it stays a 7, 6 months go by, but now he's faster, he rotates better, and he's got, you know, a better first step through the sprint work we've been doing, he is now a better outfielder. So yes, I made him better at his sport. And like, that was my argument, that we are having an impact on what they're doing on the field. If he was going to a quote unquote traditional strength conditioning coach and doing, you know, just squats and, you know, rows and whatnot, and not sprinting and not jumping and not working on, you know, throwing med balls and building rotational power, then maybe I could see that argument. But I think sports performance really comes down to, like, I'm looking at the aspects needed to make them better when it comes to physical tools that relate more to the sport. And in my opinion, yes, that means I'm having an impact on getting them better at their sport. And like, that's something I'm pretty passionate about.
Right. And I think that's just context that's lost. I don't think anyone would really 100% disagree with you on that. And that's my angle on it too, is that I can directly draw lines from what we're doing to on-field performance in some way or another. Now, I don't go through the process of absolutely tracking all of those potential lines and variants, but I do think it's lost that And I think that's where my argument with the industry, as far as how we're getting paid on a whole, kind of develops, is that, okay, well, if we're going to sit here and act like we really can't affect on-field performance, then why should we get paid more? Okay, then, and why shouldn't a football coach just handle strength conditioning?
Exactly. And
get the thing of, well, injury prevention. Okay, well, are you prepared to be judged by injury rates on your team? Well, no, because you can't prevent injuries. Well, okay, so which is it, man? Are we affecting on-field performance and preventing injuries, or do we not affect on-field performance and we don't prevent injuries? Because one of those is very valuable, one of those is not, but you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way you could ever really start to look at injuries as a way to measure our value we add would be to say, okay, I have to set constants. Like, what's the sports schedule? What's the practice schedule in games? Like, that would go into that, and all that type of stuff. And then I'm going to say, okay, like, I'm going to exclude injuries that are like contact related. So hockey, like getting hit into the boards or getting hit by a guy and falling on your hip. Like, you can't get blamed for that, obviously, but you have to understand that there is going to be some chance left up to, like, I don't know, like an ACL. Like, that's not always like something you can avoid no matter how good your training is. But I think when we start to look at saying, okay, I'm going to be involved, and we're going to get into this, like ways we can expand our role to add value to what we do, but I'm going to get involved with, you know, making decisions on what the sports schedule is going to be and what the strength schedule is going to be in terms of like strength and speed training that's done, you know, off ice or off the field or whatever. I'm going to have a say in that because I know the volume that these athletes can deal with that will hopefully put them in an advantageous position to reduce injury as much as possible. I think until we start to do things like that, it's going to be very hard to value us. And I even said, I talked to you about this in a thread on Twitter. I was like, you know, I started out with this junior hockey organization and I literally, all I had responsibility for was, you know, what we're doing in the strength and speed training, to where now I literally like sat down with the head of the organization and the coach of the team and said, okay, here's what the schedule needs to be in terms of what we're doing training wise when these guys go down to our hub city in Tampa for 6 weeks. And, you know, here's what needs to go on next year. Get rid of this on the schedule. It's too much. Add this. And listen, there's so much chance left to it, but it is nice to see that, you know, we are doing a little bit better injury wise than we have in the last couple of years, and knowing that maybe that stuff could correlate to it a little bit. But to know that I had to earn that with those guys and show them that I knew what I was doing, because when I first met them, it was, okay, you're the weight room guy, that's what you do. Like, why would you ever have a say in what they're doing on the ice or the amount of time they're practicing? But when you start making a little suggestion here, like, hey guys, like, I know you're old school and you love running 300s with the guys. Like, I couldn't really debate them on that early on, but maybe running on the asphalt on every Wednesday isn't going to be the best thing for us, you know, in terms of our legs and injuries. And we stopped doing those and things got a little bit better. I was like, okay, maybe he's got some points here. And you start to build that into your workload, so to speak. And you just add value at that point.
Yeah. And you know, don't take what I said to mean that I think that injury prevention is a good metric to necessarily judge strength conditioning by. I just pose the question usually.
It's just tough. It's you're right. It's very tough. You I don't know if you everyone wants to be on that ship, because if it sinks, you're fucked. Like that's sure. The problem.
I only brought that one up because it seems to be one in our industry, on at least online, that people want to tout as a great accomplishment of strength conditioning when there's low injury rates. But when there's high injury rates, that's the
sport. Oh, that's not my fault. Yeah. Well, I'd rather be a little underappreciated than fired. I always said that.
All right. And so that's
you can't get paid well if you're fired.
Yeah. So exactly. So my thing is just like, if we want to increase our pay as an industry, I think we just need to find ways to prove what we're doing is valuable instead of like disassociating from every outcome possible. You know, if a guy hits, let's say a running back runs for 1,000 yards and he wasn't really expected to be much of a player, you see strength conditioning coaches hop on to kind of subtly pat themselves on the back about like the work they did with that athlete, and that's why they're better. But if that same running back went out and was just terrible, you would never.
What could I have really done? I'm the strength coach.
Right, exactly. So that's my thing, is we try to have our cake and eat it too as an industry. And so for me, it's just about like developing specific metrics. But what you said was exactly right. It's about developing a relationship. Like, there is no industry where you don't actually have to develop some sort of relationship, and it's just based on purely on work quality. There, I can't think of many industries where it's like that, especially, or I say many jobs within our sport industry that's like that. So it is about just developing trust. So there's plenty of examples of guys that get big time jobs, get fired pretty quick because they go in and ruffle feathers, because while they might be right, they did a horrible job of developing relationships to impose what they wanted to do correctly. And they went in and just tried to throw everything out and implement their own thing. And then they get fired. Where I think, like what you said, when you sit there and you develop a relationship with the coaches, and you might not like exactly what they're doing at first, but you don't call them out day one. What you do is you build relationships, show them that you know what you're talking about, let them ask you questions, and eventually when that topic does come up, then you can put in your two cents, and if it works out, then all of a sudden you develop a little bit more of a voice within the staff. And I think that's an easy way to start, is just build relationships and be around and not just disassociate from everything the sport coaches are doing.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I know personally for me, it was like a confidence thing. Like, when you start to actually believe that you, like, what you're doing is working because you've seen it work, and there's just years build up and months build up, and like there's a track record, you're a little more confident and you're a little more bold to say, this is how something should be done. Because you know that odds are it's going to work from what you've seen, versus when you first start working with the team and you're like, okay, maybe an exception being like you're a 10 to 15 year vet and then you get a job. Like, if a pro organization brought me in at this point, I feel like I would know that some of the stuff I've been doing for a while with other athletes works pretty well. So I wouldn't be afraid to tell them they should start to implement it. But when you don't have a lot of experience, it can be tough because you're like, shit, if this doesn't work, like, my ass is really on the line here. You're more willing to take that risk when you know it's probably going to work and it's going to be good for you, because it makes, you know, you look like you're better at your job. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think my example would be, let's say a football coach doesn't want to buy into extending out the warm up a little bit longer at the beginning of practice because they only have a certain amount of time for practice. Probably day one that you're hired, you probably shouldn't go in and say, oh, yes, no, we need this much to warm up. What you need to do is do what they want you to do for that, whatever it is, 15 minutes. And then when things start coming up, say, hey, we could really accomplish a lot more with this warm up and even get some speed work in if you gave me 25 minutes, as that relationship builds, as opposed to going in and ruffling feathers and then people just don't listen to you anyway. So I think you might be right. People might be right going in, but nothing's going to change if you don't handle it the right way.
Yeah. Well, it's like, how the hell was I going to come in at 22 years old and look at people that have won 5 championships and 5 regular season championships and have one of the most successful programs in the area and say, nah, you got to do it a different way. Like, how the hell, what leg do I have to stand on versus me saying, hey, we're winning, but could our guys feel a little bit better? And could we last a little bit better going into the end of the season? And could we lower injuries a little bit? Like, that was a little bit better of a way to maybe handle it versus saying like, no, this doesn't work. Cause I tried that. My first year was like, all right, like, we got to stop running these 300s. And then we didn't have the type of season we wanted. And I was, you know, towards the end, it was like, oh, like, you know, I think maybe we're getting rid of those. Like, the guys lost some discipline. And I'm like, oh, like, that's not really fair to me. But that's what I get for, you know, 6 months into my first job at a really successful program that had won back-to-back championships the year before, saying, get rid of this. Like, that was more of something that had to just happen gradually from the perspective of, like, I think this could help with this. We could replace it with this. And the guys will feel better. And, like, the players giving feedback to the coaches, because they're college and, you know, more adult age, that like they can say, hey, our bodies feel better doing it this way. Like, he's kind of right. And it goes from there.
For sure. Yeah. I'm totally agreeing with that.
So what do you think some of the biggest issues are, like, in terms of what we do to do ourselves a disservice? When it's like, we're really, you know, pulling the rope from different ends here and not even realizing it when it comes to like trying to progress.
Yeah, I mean, as far as an industry, I think I touched on a little bit of it earlier, but I think one is associating with results that we find favorable and disassociating with results we don't. I think we need to be more consistent on that end. Either don't or do, but we need to pick specific metrics. That's number one. Number two is, I think, as an industry, we've gotten the habit of being martyrs in our industry. So we try to say, well, we don't do it for money, or we glorify
fuck that.
Right. Like, we don't do it for money. We don't, humble.
Hey, can I curse? I'm sponsored now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Go for it. I don't know. I don't care, but maybe your sponsors might. But you know, there's that part of it. And then it's the humble brag of the hours worked in a day. And I think that there's like, you create this expectation. Okay, this guy doesn't want money. Results really aren't a thing. And then we also glorify, like, and I don't want to name specific names or anything like that, but we glorify like the guys that are just doing nonsense because they get the juice up. Like, we glorify that. And you start seeing like comments when people hire a strength conditioning coach. They're like, oh, this guy's a nut. Ha, hilarious. I love it. I can't wait to see what the guys are doing, kind of thing. And it's like, that's not good. That's not good for the industry that we're basically a joke. We're basically, this guy's the psycho on staff that results aren't because of him. He says so himself. And he doesn't do it for money, so we don't need to pay him much. Like, we do a lot of it to ourselves. And so when there's all this big talk on unionization and things like that, it's not that I don't think the arguments are there. I just think that we're trying to skip to step 10 when there's steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 there for us to start showing why we're bringing value. And I think another big thing we do is when we feel encroached upon as an industry, especially in the collegiate or sports setting, I think when we feel encroached upon, we're quick to throw up the stay in your lane kind of stuff, which I think is fair a lot of the times, but I think it just makes us retreat to the weight room and we don't actually branch out. So a lot of these strength coaches that work all day, and you know, I would include myself in that, like that all day work schedule is not literally group after group after group after group after group after group after group, after group, or you wouldn't have any big, strong strength coaches anymore. They wouldn't have time to work out, you know? So there's a lot of time in the day, even between groups, even with those busy schedules. And I'm not saying they're not busy. They are. I just think there's a lot that we do to ourselves by disassociating from results, saying we don't do it for money, not trying to be involved in the actual sports staff itself. And then I think we lump everyone into the same industry too much, where we say we should be paid more strength condition coaches or we should unionize. And when I look around, like, I don't want to be associated with 80% of the industry sometimes, you know? So I think that's kind of where I stand on it, where I think we're holding ourselves back. But that's just, I mean, it's my opinion. It doesn't mean I'm right, but it's just where I stand right now.
Yeah, and it's almost like we've made it that a person who makes money in this field must be an asshole pulling the wool over someone's eyes, and they're not that good, and they're just getting paid for like, it blows my mind. Like, I am so close to the vest with how my business does and how all of that goes because of the fact that I think people still make it out like you're a criminal if you make good money in this field.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. Like, it's, oh, this guy's just trying to make a quick buck or whatever that might be. And you know, I get that kind of thing when I talk against some of the points brought up in the industry about pay. Because I still think if you're exceptional, you're going to get paid what you're worth. So like, the market determines your value, Coach. Well, I mean, was it Dr. Rhea at Alabama, right? Or is it Ray or Rhea?
I honestly don't know. You just said Rhea, and I usually say Rhea, and I'm like, shit, have I been saying it wrong the whole time? But then you don't even know either, so I'm not sure.
But he's a good example. Like, he's getting paid well, and he's shown his value. Like, he's proven what he does is effective. in different ways. And so he gets paid accordingly. There's guys that get paid accordingly all over the place. They get paid their value. I just think like it's up to us to determine, to prove our value. Just like you don't just throw shoes up on, if you make shoes, you don't just throw shoes up online and price it at $200 if you're not going to prove that it's worth $200, or at least market it to the point where they believe it's worth $200. And so I just, that where I come from is like, people attack me when I say things like that because they're like, well, it's easy for you to stay on the private side. You can make however much money you want. Okay, well, couple things on that. One, I don't make much money. Like I'll be willing to share my W-2 with anybody. But two, yeah, sure. Okay. If it's so much easier on the private side, then you come and do it. No one's telling you you need to work at a school. Like that's, you want to work at the school and you're the one agreeing to the pay. That no one forced you to agree to that pay. Let's say Baylor or let's say University of Texas comes to you tomorrow, Jerry, and says, or let's say not you, Jerry, but let's just say a random strength coach says, hey, I want you to be our assistant strength coach for $40,000 a year. Or let's say $30,000 a year. Just make it egregiously low. $30,000 a year. People are should turn that down. But for whatever reason, people accept that job and then complain about the pay. Well, just turn it down and take a different job or prove that you're worth more and see if they'll pay you more. If not, just go do something else. If you're really not in it for the money, you won't complain about the money. If you're in it for the money, you won't do it for nothing. So that's where I stand.
Yeah, and it's also like if I've been in the private sector for all this time, you build up a social media following, you build up a name, and people know who you are. You set the terms. Like no one, like if a pro team or a college team right now came to me and said, "You need to, or you're gonna, here's our offer to work with us. Here's the pay, but you can't do anything with your business. You can't." I'd be like, "All right, well, unless the pay completely replaces my business, then no." You know, I could set the terms. I could say, okay, or you can still continue to do your business, but here's the amount of time you need to commit, and here's the pay. I can then make that determination in my mind if that's worth it or not. And if I don't want to do it, I either say I need to get more money, and I don't need you, so you're either going to pay me, or I'm just not going to take the job, or this isn't going to work out. And I think so many people don't realize that, like, if you can maintain a little bit of your individuality and build up a little bit of who you are independently, you know, that is like, I can service so many D3 schools for not a bunch of money because they're not expecting me to have that as my only job. They're asking my company to help them with their training and like, here's what we can pay you. And then here's what I give them and whatever. Like, that, in my opinion, like I've even said long ago, like my goal would be to continue to grow and continue to draw the attention of a lot of schools that would say, hey, we want your services. And then I could say, okay, here's the rate I'm going to charge you. I send a coach over there and they get paid way better than they would if they just got the job themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And Jerry, I can't wrap my head around people complaining about pay that they agreed to. I just can't. Like, don't take the, do something else. No, you're not entitled to make X amount of money at your dream job. If it's your dream job, but it doesn't pay enough for you to be happy in it, don't take it. Go do something else. I can't wrap my head around it. If you don't want the job, don't take it. Find something that pays more. If you can't find something in strength conditioning that's going to pay you enough, go do something else. That's not to say pay shouldn't be better in strength conditioning. But I don't understand just the blind complaining about jobs you accepted.
Yeah. Like no one has a gun to your head. And it's just also like, I tell people all the time, like and I've been coming around to the idea more and more of like, don't complain about something unless you offer solutions. Like, I think that's important. You know, I don't think it's fair for me to be like, up speed ladders suck, BOSU ball balancing drills suck, and just not give any alternatives. Like, I think that's important, like to continue to further, you know, the things we want to see and things that we want to be done the right way. We need to tell people why they're wrong and that we don't like them, but then what are better things to do and why they're better. You know, if I can go out there and say, okay, like you don't need to do that, or like there's no reason you should be working a job for $20K at a small college and be struggling to pay your bills. And I'm like, okay, like look at that school and say, listen, you either don't want to spend the money or don't have the budget to pay me what I should get paid. Whether it's like you're getting paid 20 and you should get paid 50, whatever the number is. You look at them and you say, okay, we have this gigantic training facility here. And, you know, you only use it for the teams I'm working with for X amount of time during a day or during a week. I want you to let me train people privately. I go start my own LLC. I want you to let me train people privately in this space when it's not being used by the school or by the team, and let me supplement my income because you cannot pay me a higher market value. It's not going to cost you any money, and it's going to let me make money that is of my service and my level of production and what I can do and the quality of a coach that I am, which then in turn allows you to have a coach for a bargain who's way better than what you're able to pay him. And I'm like, why are more people not doing that?
Yeah, I mean, so exactly what you just said there is kind of our business model in a couple of places. So
same with me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not providing solutions is a big drawback. And so I want to make sure that we do talk about some. One is exactly what you just said. We have two school contracts, one with the high school, one with the university, where what we went in with is basically you're paying a strength conditioning coach. You're allowing us to operate our business privately in the non-school associated time. In which case we're able to, if we build up business enough, then we can build out a staff, and you might have 4, 5, 6, 7 strength coaches for the price of one as a school. So that's one way we've built out our business. Another way we can do it is understanding where the industry is going in sports right now is that people are athletes have a lot of tools at their disposal, and they're very drawn to athletic development overall. So they don't necessarily care about what school it is. They want the school. Prestige doesn't matter as much as it used to, at least in baseball. So in baseball, it's more like, well, I think I want to go here. Here's a better team, but here's where I'm going to develop more. And so I think if we as strength condition coaches can wrap our head around not just focusing on the weight room, but actually blending skill a little bit in the weight room. And when I say not just the weight room, I mean your traditional lifts and your GPP type work. If we can focus on actually developing athletes and show that we can improve athletic qualities and on-field performance, then we can play a bigger role in recruiting, which makes us more valuable. So I think that's another way we can go about it as well. And then three, I think if we want to get paid more, I think we need to prove our value a little bit more. So when I say prove our value, it's not that I don't believe strength coaches bring value, but let's set some metrics that you want to be judged by. And if you do exceptionally well, I believe you should be paid more. And I believe if you show an administration or a coaching staff or whatever it might be, that you're doing things exceptionally well, then you will be paid more, or they would be at risk of losing you. So I think those are three things that we can do as an industry, at least on like the collegiate side or the high school side, to actually better our place in the market.
Yeah. And like you said too, take it into your own hands, develop or come up with the things that you can have your performance measured on that you think you can help with. And when those things go up, you ask for more money.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But if they go down, be willing to say that you didn't do a great job. Don't just disassociate. You can't have
it. No, well, to that token, like, no, you have a lot of control over those things, and that the performance of how they do is mostly predicated on the job that you're doing and not 1,400 different variables you have to pray go your way. Because you can go for the home run and say, I want to be measured on if we win championships or not, and – you know, you just get lucky and you win one and then you're good. Or you can go by like, you know, hey, I want to get paid based on, you know, how I can show that we're getting more power output later in the season from our athletes. And I could prove that that's happening. You know, as just prove one example. If it's
happening broadly in our industry, then it makes you really valuable, you know. But if you say what you're doing is a dime a dozen, then it still doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's the balance. Again, like, you don't want to pick something that's like so far out there that we really don't have much control over, just to say that you're separate from, you're separating yourself from anybody else in the field. But you also don't want to just say, hey, like, I get everybody squat up. Like, okay, like, the fuck does that do for me?
Exactly.
At least to a point. All right. So we got into this a little bit earlier on, but circling back to it a little more. So we're talking now about, you know, things we can do to say, yeah, hey, we're on more of that performance side of things because we are impacting stuff, you know, more specific to our sport. But when it comes to understanding sports and their movement needs, you know, where do we begin? You know, I do like the idea of the reverse engineering part. Like, you could know jack shit about energy systems and the terms that are being used, but if you just watch the sport and like time how active, how long the active period is versus how long rest is. Like, if you watch a pitcher and you say, okay, they're exerting themselves maximally for a couple seconds and then they're resting for 20 seconds, or, you know, I'm watching a hockey game and I could say, hey, like, the shift was 50 seconds. Coming off the ice was for 2 minutes, and here's what the 50 seconds on the ice really looked like. You can just structure conditioning, you know, as an example, based on that without knowing jack shit about what the alactic energy system is, or what the aerobic system is. Like, if you just kind of go by plug and plays, like a puzzle type of thing.
Right.
So I like that reverse engineering idea in that sense. You know, ways we can start to say, you know, building what we're doing around the requirements of the sport to kind of bring value to what we're doing.
Yeah. I think what we're, and that's a great example used as far as energy systems goes. I think the point I was trying to make at the time in that tweet was, you see a lot of people posting, let's say, a deadlift and saying, this is why a deadlift is important to the sport, as opposed to saying, here's what the demands are of the sport. Here are the exercise selections that would be appropriate for creating those adaptations to address those demands. I think that's where we get lost, is more like, we're trying to find ways to prove that a front squat is beneficial in baseball or in basketball, as opposed to saying, here are the demands of the sport, and a front squat might be the best way. But I feel like we're trying to do almost like apologetics on just general strength conditioning and trying to apply it to sport, as opposed to sport performance, which would be more looking at the adaptations we're trying to address and make weight room adjust to the context of that part of it. So instead of saying, hey, a deadlift is great because hip hinging is great, this is why you should deadlift because hip hinging happens in your sport, in, let's say, in baseball, like in hitting, right? You're going to be in a hip hinge, as opposed to saying, okay, there's a hip hinge in baseball, and it's vital to be able to control that hip hinge. Exercises can we use to address that? And maybe the conventional deadlift is one. It's just, I think that a lot of times it's presented backwards.
Yeah. It's like, if I look at it and I say, okay, you know, I want to improve, I'm trying to think of an example. All right. I want to, let's say sprinting was the sport. Let's say we're dealing with a track athlete, right? And I look at, and I say, okay, top speed output needs to be a little bit higher. Okay, well then what's something I can do to improve that, that is outside of just the obvious answer of sprinting? And I say, okay, well, generally speaking, the limb, the foot makes contact with the ground in top speed with relatively lower amounts of flexion, you know, pretty extended, et cetera. You know, maybe I could work on some, you know, isolated range of motion, real like elevated squats where the limb is maybe 2/3 or 3/4 of the way extended, and I have to just drive the bar off the pins and express concentric power from that position. Like, that to me was okay. I just took the movement and worked backwards to the modality I would use in the weight room to get an effect for it, versus me saying like, like, I like the back squat, or I like the trap bar deadlift, and everyone here uses it. Let me go look for things in the sport that relate to that, so I can tell people that I do a good job with sport-specific programming.
Exactly. So that's where a lot of people go wrong. And then another version of that would be the thinking of the sport first, but then thinking in terms of like weight room dogma, if you will. So saying like, well, this athlete, he's strong, but he's not very powerful. Power cleans. You know, it's like, well, that's not exactly that's not going to be applicable in the way, let's say it's a hitter. Power cleans aren't going to be necessarily probably the best way to do it. But if you're all you know is Olympic lifting and powerlifting, then that's your power exercise half the time. So it's kind of an interesting area to look at, because like what you said, you look at the sport and be like, okay, well, what I post a video. Here's a good example. Someone jumping. Okay, if we're going for vertical speed and vertical force production, and I post a video of someone doing a half squat or a quarter squat, and like, well, it's not all the way down. It's not a good squat. I don't care. You know, it's about the context of the sport. And at
I said it the other day. If you're still worried about that, you're missing a lot.
Right, and that, but that's still like a thing that we're talking about, and it's more about the standards of Olympic lifting or powerlifting that we're worried about than the actual context of the sport. And I just think context of the sport has to be king. And then what are we trying to create in the weight room? And then what exercise selection, or even exercise creation in some instances are we using to address that?
Yeah. And again, it all starts with like, and I think there's a time and place. Like, I don't really need to give a shit about that when I'm dealing with a 12-year-old. Like,
for sure.
The bucket of just general strength and power is probably empty. Let's fill it and then go from there. And I think that's where people miss the boat. It's like, again, black and white. Like, it always has to be that way. Like, it markets easier, requires less thought. Like, you know, how easy is it for me to say, you know, don't have anybody back squat because it could hurt some people, because now I don't have to worry about helping anybody squat better to make them not have to worry about it hurting, and we could just do another exercise and it removes my need to have to do that. Like that, like that to me, like, is the whole reason people get black and white, is because it's easier, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's taking the art out of coaching and trying to make everything this or that or a binary selection. And I think
what do I do if my kid has to go play D1 football next year and I know they're going to back squat there? Leave them out to dry and say, okay, we don't do that here? That's terrible to me. Then they're wasting their money going to a person like that.
For sure. And I think that's exactly a good point. Even when you look at, let's say, 14 or 15-year-old, and the point used with a back squat, okay, well, you can say that there's better ways that strength isn't necessarily the biggest factor in hitting or sprinting or anything like that. Well, okay, but you know, you're using research from a well-trained college and professional athlete standpoint, not a 14, 15-year-old adolescent. But then also, like, I'm not a huge Olympic lifting guy, but that's not to say I don't program Olympic lifts and I don't program the clean. It's just that with pro baseball, I only have a few months, and if they've never done it and they're not proficient at it, I'm going to spend my time learning the lift instead of affecting performance. And so that's not worth it to me. But if I have a 12-year-old that wants to play high school football and college football, I want to teach him those things because he's going to be exposed to it at some point in the future anyway. And we have a longer training block. So since he's going to have to do it, I have to get him ready for it. I can't just be, everything's got to follow my system, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like, I think there is a time where there is some acquiescence that needs to happen because of, again, back to the thing we first talked about on the show, the athletes that come to us because they just need to get better at their sport. If the appearance or the deemed preparation level of what they're doing when they get to school, let's say as a freshman or when they get to a pro work, like, if I know that the football player I'm working with is going to get to campus and they're going to do a squat test, better yet, let me use an actual example right now. I'm dealing with a woman soccer player. She's going to be playing at, you know, at a top 10 school next year. Like, she's very, very good. You know, I took what the testing protocols were. I was given them by the parents from the strength coach at the school of what they're doing. And this just happened to be a time where I loved what they were doing. Like, I think they were doing some great stuff. It doesn't always happen that way. But, like, I took those things and I was like, okay, let's make sure those things are where they need to be. So she looks good and she has a leg up on anybody else she's there going there with, not only in, you know, this stuff helping her performance, but in helping her perception to the coaches as a freshman that's looking for playing time. If we're not doing that, if my ego or my lack of knowledge in something says I'm not going to do that with her or him because I don't do it, and then I'm going to leave them susceptible of going to campus and not being at a level that'll help them get more time, then I'm, again, doing them a disservice.
Right. I mean, I don't have, speaking on the pro side, another example with the pro baseball side is I don't have a lot of guys out here doing conditioning all off season, but the last few weeks before spring training, I know that they're going to have some sort of conditioning test. So I'm going to prepare them specifically for that test so that they're not doing a conditioning test and then going out on the field and can't perform because it's something new that they're exposed to. So I'm going to prepare them for it so that they can recover from it and actually perform on the field.
That's the same. Yeah, it doesn't mean we agree with it, but like we're not going to let our athletes fail because we're like, fuck that, we don't do that.
Right, exactly.
Like, we'll get to that point once we keep on putting the message out there that that's not needed. Eventually, it'll be, you know, done away with, hopefully, at most levels, and then we don't have to deal with that. But for right now, like, as much as those athletes know that we're right in how we do things, like, they don't care if they're getting their doors blown off because they do it a different way at school. It's like, oh, fuck, like, right. You know, how can I trust this guy if he let me get dogged like that, even though this isn't the right stuff to be doing? He knew we were going to do it, and he didn't help me.
Right, exactly.
So I think that's pretty valuable when it comes to like, are there lines that we shouldn't cross? Yeah. Like, okay, that's dangerous. Like I'm not doing that with you here because you're going to get hurt. Okay, fine. But very rarely is it that extreme. And it's more so like, I'm not going to do that with you because we don't do that here. It's like, oh, like, hey coach, like I don't really have my athletes clean, but an athlete of mine says, can I use that this winter because we do it at school and if I get better at it, my coach will be happy. I'm like, yeah, like go ahead, like that's what we're gonna do. So like,
yeah,
that's an example. Like I'm doing that because it's better for them in the long run of like how they're going to be perceived at the school and how the strength coach feels, and you know, getting experience where like I can get on the phone with a lot of these coaches and they can know that their athletes are in good hands. Like that's just, again, back to what we talked about, you know, building relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a big thing within our industry is just getting over the pride in a number of areas. I've a pitcher that was in this offseason that wanted to do cleans. He's a guy who hates the weight room, hates everything about it, but he wanted to do cleans. The team wasn't necessarily on board. The only reason he wanted to do cleans really was because it sounded fun to him and it looks explosive and he feels athletic he thinks it looks athletic and he wants to try to learn it. And so we had cleans in his programming the entire offseason, not because I thought it was going to be the absolute best thing in the world for him physically in terms of adaptation, but I thought it was going to keep him engaged in the training because that was the only thing he thought looked fun, as opposed to doing like split squat ISOs and lunges. We still got all that stuff in, but I made sure cleans were in there because it was something that could get him locked in mentally and get excited about coming because he could progress on that.
Yeah.
And then the pride, just like not coordinating with other coaches, like at the schools, I talk to strength. We have collegiate athletes coming in the winter and I invite all the strength coaches to reach out to me. And I had a good conversation with, and his name's escaping me right now, but Alabama's, baseball strength coach. I had a good conversation with him about one of the athletes. And my big thing was like, what are y'all doing with him? What are y'all planning on doing when he's getting back so I can bridge the gap for you? Not, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is my system. So just deal with it. It's more about trying to get him prepared for, keep his progress going, but get him prepared for what he's about to get in the spring too.
Yeah, exactly. Like be open to talking to them. They'll receive things a little better. And again, it makes your athlete look better. Like let's not do a disservice to our athletes and make the coach hate them because they have a dickhead private strength coach, right? Like that's important.
Reach out to them. Like, there's all this pride too about like, well, they never called me. Okay, well, call them. Just give them a call. It's not the end of the world. Call them. Talk to them about what we're doing, and we're all on the same page trying to get the athletes better. So let's just handle it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, that goes back to the point of the episode. How can we further ourselves as a field, get paid better, you know, communicating amongst ourselves in a better way? You mentioned before, like, if I disagree with 80% of the field, why the hell would I want to unionize? Like, we need to communicate with each other. And I think overall that'll be kind of what sets us up to continue to push the boundaries of what we can earn. Yeah. All right. So that was awesome. You know, really cool that we could talk about that and shed some light on. I think it's important for a lot of people in the field to listen to, but do you have any closing thoughts, anything from you? Obviously, you know, I like to give my guests a chance to do that if they have anything.
I mean, yeah, one, just obviously thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to get on and talk. It's just like any other phone call we have, we should just start recording those. But just, I think we're all on the same page as far as the field goes, as far as wanting to actually progress. I want everyone to be able to earn as much money as they need to support the lifestyle they want. I just think that we are pointing the finger at a lot of places when we should be pointing the finger at ourselves and cleaning up some things on our end before we start doing all that. Before we start pointing the fingers at administrations and talking about unionizing and things like that, we need to clean out our own closet and focus on providing value, only taking jobs that you feel are adequately valuing you. And that's pretty much it. And just like swallowing your pride and being honest, if you think you're affecting performance, say so. If you think you're reducing injuries, say so. But be prepared to be judged by those things. Don't try to have it both ways. And I think if we do those things, the industry will move forward and we will make more money as a whole. And I just think that a lot of these things need to be defined and need to be addressed before we start pointing fingers elsewhere.
Yeah, be accountable. Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kev. Like I said, thank you again for coming on. I think we could start recording more of our conversation. They did make for some pretty damn good episodes too, but appreciate your time. And obviously we'll be talking again soon. So thank you.
I appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks, man.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, signing off from the show that's changing how we view sports performance, training, and business.